We've got the vibrant greens and colorful blossoms of spring and summer, followed by the rich hues of autumn, and then the drab gray of winter. But there are some plants that can brighten up the cold months. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes will be here to talk about planting some winter color for the landscape. We'll talk about bark, berries, and blooms. Of course, they'll also answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Call us 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it's Horticulture Day today. Once people start taking down their holiday lights and decorations, the drabness of the winter landscape can be a little depressing for some of us, especially if you're not a fan of winter. And this hour, we're going to talk about some of the plants that bring color to the winter landscape. With me this hour, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Richard, you sent me a picture not long ago of a plant that was still in bloom in December.
Yes.
That's pretty impressive. Tell us about it.
That is a common witch hazel. And they bloom typically from like late October to early December. And they have these strap-like petals, four petals per flower. And they're yellow. And on very cold days, they roll up into a tight ball, and then the warm days, they unfurl. And so they're quite a sight when you see those in early December.
Absolutely. And it's kind of a pale yellow or a gold color. Very pretty. The picture you sent me was taken on November 30th. So how long was it in bloom this year?
It was basically for about the first week or 10 days in December.
Wow.
And then it got very cold, and they kind of just balled up, and that was it, basically.
So what does the plant look like the rest of the year?
It's a large shrub or a small tree. It's actually native to Iowa, common witch hazel. It grows maybe 10, 15, 20 feet tall. It does have really nice fall color. It's a very nice clear yellow, so you also have that. And the cultivar, let me find that.
Harvest Moon.
Harvest Moon. Mm-hmm. That's the one that I sent you a picture of. They tend to drop their leaves early, so you see the flowers much more clearly.
So the flowers are there before the leaves drop?
Yeah, they are.
All right. So. And then the leaves drop, and it becomes nothing but bloom.
Right. Correct.
Fascinating. Okay. So, and that lasts through early December, which is really remarkable.
Right.
Are there any other plants like that?
But there's a vernal witch hazel, which blooms in late winter, typically sometime in, let's say, late February to early April. And the flowers on this one tend to be kind of brownish orange to yellow. And so it's another witch hazel, but at the opposite time of that period.
What kind of environment do witch hazel do well in?
Typically, the native witch hazels are found kind of in partial shade, so you tend to find those maybe at the woodland edge where they get part sun, part shade. They're fairly easy to grow. They're not demanding. Basically, a good well-drained soil and partial to full sun, they do fine.
And the picture you sent me was, of course, from the Iowa State University campus. So a witch hazel walk.
Yep.
So. Nice. And where is that on campus?
Right next to the horticulture building.
Lovely. All right. So let's talk about some of the other options. There aren't a lot of plants that are going to bloom for you outside in the winter months. But what we've got bark, berries, and bloom to talk about. So let's talk about bark. What are some of the plants that can add some real interest to the landscape, even when there are no leaves?
The most common would be the red osier dogwood. That's a very common dogwood, again, native to Iowa. It has the kind of blood red stems or branches. They're very common in Iowa. You see them in landscapes along the interstate. Very well adapted to our environment, and very, very showy. And if you put it in the landscape, what you want to do is go out there maybe every other year and remove a portion of the stems, because the best color tends to be on the younger stems. So you want to prune out some of the older growth periodically.
All right. And since it's a dogwood, does it also bloom in spring?
It does. The flowers aren't real showy. They're kind of a creamy white. And then they have some small berries after that. But it's really the color of the actual branches that are really striking.
All right, yeah, and I'm looking at pictures online right now, and that's almost just a sunset color, really beautiful. All right, other bark that we should look at?
For example, there are some willows, like the flame willow, where the stems can be kind of reddish-orange, so that's another one. And like most willows, very easy to grow. Now, with the willows that have the really showy color, you need to cut them back probably annually, so they come back and have new growth, because the new growth, again, tends to have the best color. Other possibilities would be like the river birch, which is also native to Iowa. It's a tree, can be quite large, but the bark varies from kind of orangish brown to almost white, so you have some color there.
All right, and texture with the river birch, too.
Correct.
To add some interest into the landscape. Well, that's so interesting. I guess I've never thought about buying a plant specifically for what its bark looks like. But that's why you're a horticulturist and I'm not, I guess. one of the many, many reasons. So what about berries?
As far as berries, there are a number of things that have berries. I like the hollies. And you have two different types. You have the native holly, winterberry, which is deciduous. And the females, you have both male and female plants. The females produce these berries that turn a bright red in late summer. Now, they don't persist throughout the entire winter. They don't, because the wildlife tends to eat those. But going into winter, they're very attractive. They're bright red. You just have to make sure you have at least one male, and you can have several females. And then we have the Meserve hybrid.
And will they be identified at the nursery center, do you think?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Because they typically have names like, for example, Jim Dandy is a man.
All right.
So you know.
Good clue.
Southern Gentleman, which is a male.
All right.
And then you have the females like Winter Red, Christmas Cheer. Pretty obvious what you're getting. So, and then we have the Meserve hybrid hollies. And these are true hollies. They retain their leaves in the wintertime. And, again, make sure you have one male and several females. And these have really dark green leaves and these red berries in the winter. Again, China boy, China girl, so you know which is which.
All right, so be sure to pick out a mixture. And, of course, attracting the birds to your landscape can be a lot of fun,
right,
too.
Right.
All right. Any other berries we should talk about?
There is another one. Let me see here on my list. Hawthorns would be good. They're a small ornamental tree. They have the white flowers in the spring. But there are some very good cultivars that have these berries that turn kind of a bright red. And they do persist quite well into winter. The Washington Hawthorn is one that has a really nice fruit display, so you might want to look for Washington Hawthorn.
All right. And are those something that attract birds as well? Or?
Yes. Again, they'll eat the fruit. Yes. Eventually, they eat the fruit. So it typically disappears eventually.
As most things tend to do. All right. So we've talked about barks and berries. What about... Well, I guess we started with the blooms, with the witch hazel. Mm-hmm. Anything else in the bloom category we should be thinking about?
I think Cindy has a few perennials that you might want to try.
Well, yes. So the Linton rose might be something you consider for a bloom. It's sometimes called Christmas rose. There's a type of Christmas rose, and it blooms very early. This is a herbaceous perennial, so it's fairly low-growing, but really kind of tough when it's in a slightly protected location. And these flowers... when they open up sometime in late February or March, they can be kind of a creamy yellow, a whitish. They can be kind of a chartreuse green or burgundy, yellow, and even close to black. So they're very interesting kind of colorations on something very small and kind of nice to see. It's one of the first things that blooms as far as the herbaceous perennials go.
All right, so about approximately when?
Late February, March, sometimes, depends on the weather. So if it's getting a little bit warmer earlier, then it's you can see it as early as late February. Normally, it's sometime in early March.
Okay, so another really tenacious plant.
Mm-hmm. And usually those blooms are part of the sepals, so they're not actually part of the petals, so they hang on for a month or more. Uh-huh. So it's something that really lasts.
Nice, even before those spring bulbs start showing up.
Right.
Very nice. And what kinds of colors?
Colors on those particular flowers are like that chartreuse creamy, whitish yellow, kind of a burgundy purple, and sometimes a black, or almost so dark a burgundy it's a blackish flower.
All right. Any other blooms we should think about?
The other thing that I like that I have near my front door is a woody plant called Cornelian cherry dogwood. It's one of the first things to bloom in my landscape. Usually, it's blooming sometime in late February or early March as well. Tiny, bright, kind of chartreuse yellow flowers all over the twigs. So it's just really very early. It does have nice bark as it gets older and kind of a little bit shaggy, and does produce a berry that the birds like in spring and summer.
And it's kind of a pretty berry, too.
It is. It's an edible berry. If some people make jams and jellies out of it. They add lots of sugar because it's pretty tart.
You can make jelly out of anything if you add enough sugar, is what I've learned.
This is true.
For example, dandelion jelly doesn't really taste like dandelions so much to me as a lot of sugar. But
this is the same.
All right.
But it's a pretty color. Which is a pretty color. But it's a nice, I grow this one because of the flowers. It's a small tree, around 20 feet. Put it close to the house so that you can see it. Because it's one of the kind of heralds the beginning of spring.
Nice. And I've noticed with the blooms we've been talking about, they do tend to be sort of those muted colors. These aren't going to necessarily be showy flowers that show up in the winter, but they wouldn't be because they're not trying to attract insects, right?
Some of them are. I mean, you will see some insects. I don't think you see that many insects around, but some of them are trying to attract insects. They do need to be pollinated, and they need that kind of fruit production. But, yeah, it's you don't have to be as showy so early in the spring.
You don't have a lot of competition.
Not a lot of competition.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions about the plants and trees in your landscape, your winter, spring, summer, or fall landscape. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Also, we've been talking about color in the winter landscape. If you have a favorite plant for color in the wintertime, let us know about it. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. That number again, 866-780-9100. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. And Ralph is on the line in Grinnell. Hello, Ralph.
Hey there. Colder than a politician's promise out there.
It's pretty
what
chilly.
What is the best thing, and I didn't pick either side today, what is the best thing to plant to produce the most amount of pollen for our pollinators in the springtime?
Well, I would probably go with some of the spring flowering trees and shrubs.
Willows.
Like the willows, your service berries, your crab apples,
buffalo cherries,
your plums. So those are very good as far as for the pollinators.
And you said buffalo cherries, Ralph?
Right, yeah.
I'm not sure about those as far as the pollen on those, but Most spring flowering trees and shrubs are highly attractive to the pollinators.
I've seen a fair amount of bees in the past and other hovering type flies when the buffalo cherries bloom. They're not the most tasty things in the world because you've eaten them before. They're more seed than anything else. What about gooseberries, hickory trees, or what about hedge trees? Do hedge trees have any kind of nectar?
Most of the nut trees typically are wind pollinated. They're not insect pollinated, so most of those probably wouldn't be of much use for the pollinators. You mentioned also what else?
The Osage orange.
Osage orange. I'm not sure exactly what pollinates that.
I never really paid too much attention.
Yeah, the flowers are awfully small. They're very inconspicuous. I would guess that the insects are not very important as far as pollination.
All right. Ralph, thank you so much for your call. Now, Richard, I know that you hate ground ivy more than pretty much anything else. But I have read that that's one of the earliest flowers for pollinators is ground ivy or creeping Charlie.
It might be, but it's not a native plant to begin with.
And it's not worth it.
And it's not worth it. I'd rather have clover in my yard than ground ivy.
All right, but, I mean, there is something to be said for some of those early, quote-unquote, weeds that do have blooms, right?
Right, and I think some of the wildflowers, too, that you might find in the woods would attract some of the bees and other pollinators, too.
All right.
For example, things like woodland phlox, Virginia bluebells, some of those things that bloom early in the spring, yet they attract bees, too, so.
All right, make space for flowers.
Right.
But not ground ivy.
Right.
All right. This is an email. I just want to validate Richard's recommendations about witch hazels. I've planted both species, the Virginiana and Vernalis, in central Iowa. They're very showy, unique plants for the winter landscape. I cheerfully welcome the flowers of the vernal species as a harbinger of spring after a long, cold winter. And this one's from Anne. I'd like to ask about a shrub or tree named the Seven Suns tree.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, that one is actually not native to the United States, but it blooms basically in late summer, typically August, and the bees and other pollinators love it. It's just full of various pollinators. So it has the white flowers late in the summer. And then after flowering, the flower sepals, they turn kind of a reddish purple. And you have this very nice color in the fall of the year. And so it's quite amazing.
Very nice. So that bloom just gives you a lot of color, a lot of beauty for a long time.
Well, you have the bloom, and then you have the fruits or whatever.
The gift that remains.
Right. And they also have exfoliating bark. So it's kind of a small tree. So you have the flowers, the fruits. You have the exfoliating bark. So it's quite a unique plant.
Interesting. All right, let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Doug is on the line in Rockwell City. Hi, Doug.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
My question isn't about plants for winter. I'm looking to the spring. The last 2 years here in Rockwell City, I've planted a garden, and it didn't do so well, and I found out it's because of a black walnut tree that's in my neighbor's yard, almost on the property line, that overhangs most of my backyard. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions for what kind of vegetables and also shrubs and trees would grow near a black walnut.
Okay. Well, the black walnut does produce a compound. It's called juglone, which tends to inhibit the growth of certain plants. It doesn't affect every plant, but it affects some. And some of the most affected, the most sensitive, are plants in the Solanaceae family. And so things like tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, those tend to be very, very sensitive. Some other vegetables tend to be much more tolerant. Things, for example, like green beans, maybe lettuce, etc. So it's not everything. So I would try to obviously plant my solanaceae crops as far away as I can, and maybe try some other vegetables closer on to the actual walnut tree.
All right, so what kinds of vegetables might do okay?
I would try things like snap beans. I would try things like lettuce and spinach. I'd probably try carrots and beets, those type of things. But make sure definitely the tomatoes, peppers, potatoes are far, far away.
All right, Doug, do you think that'll help you out?
Yeah, what about shrubs and trees?
Well, I think most shrubs that will tolerate shade will also tolerate being close to a walnut tree. So things, for example, like gray dogwood, arrowwood viburnum, shrubs that typically will tolerate shade, I think they'll be fine in that area.
All right. And we've talked about the chemical that the tree produces. Mm-hmm. How far out does that go?
It's hard to say. It's typically going to be most concentrated within the drip line of the tree. And as you go further out, it's going to be less and less. And it doesn't really kill most plants. What it tends to do is it makes competing plants grow less vigorously. So the walnut tree has a competitive advantage. And so if you combine that with plants that like full sun, they're not going to do very well next to a big walnut tree. They just can't survive in that situation very well.
All right. Doug, thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dwayne is up next in Bettendorf. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a blue spruce, a mature tree, probably 20 feet or so, but the center core of it is kind of starting to dry out, lose needles. Any suggestions?
Well, I will say that to begin with, the needles are not permanent, that they typically remain on the tree for 3 to 4 years, and eventually they fall off. So in the spring of the year, they put on new growth at the very ends of the branches, and every fall they lose their oldest needles, those closest to the trunk. So where you have a large pine tree, spruce tree, fir tree, if you look inside, it's bare because all those needles have fallen off. Now, as a tree gets older, sometimes they don't age very gracefully. And so you can maybe see inside where you couldn't when they were younger. Okay, so that could be a possibility. And then finally, you could be seeing Rhizosphera needle cast, which is a fairly common fungal disease. And what that does is it will cause the needles to drop off sooner than they normally would. So you have fewer needles. So it's not quite as dense. So that could be a factor also.
All right. And how long does he need to watch it before he sees that and feels concerned?
Well, what he can do, if there's any concern about Rhizosphera needle cast, would be to send a sample into Iowa State to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, have them look at that. And if it is Rhizosphera needle cast, they can ID that very quickly. So,
all right. Thanks a lot for your call, Dwayne. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. With me this hour, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at ISU. And Kay is on the line in Coralville. Hello, Kay.
Hello. I just enjoy your show so much. I want to thank you all. And I want to particularly thank Richard Duran. Last June, I had the idea of, I'm 75 years old, and I decided I wanted to plant a northern red oak tree. And I called Richard at the university, and he was very patient with me. This was June 22nd, and I asked him, what do I need to look for? And how do I care for this tree? Yeah, our maple got wrecked by the storm, and I wanted to replace it with a red oak tree, and I wanted to do it in honor of my deceased brother-in-law. Anyway, Richard gave me the information, and I want him to know I followed it meticulously. And this business of watering...
And it's still alive, right? The tree is still alive.
Pardon me?
And the tree is still doing well, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
The business of watering it until the ground freezes, that made a real challenge.
Well,
the first week of November, we had butterflies in the yard.
Oh, that's.
But I just thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And you're making Richard blush.
Kate, yeah, thank you so much for your call, Kate, and thank you for listening. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Pat is on the line in Van Meter. Hi, Pat.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about quaking aspen trees. I've got several of these trees in my yard, and they look healthy most of the year, except they don't. The leaves don't turn the bright gold like they do in the western states.
Yeah.
They just turn brown
mm-hmm.
and eventually fall off. And I was just checking to see why that is, if there's something we could put on, you know, feed them or something to make it so they turn gold like the other aspens, you know, that people love to look at so much.
Right. It's basically the environment. I've been in Colorado in the fall, and it's just amazing the bright yellow of the aspens. But in Iowa,
right.
because our weather's different, oftentimes they don't develop very good color. They just don't. It's basically the environment,
okay.
the weather. Another factor which comes into play is sometimes they will get a fungal disease, a leaf disease, and that will cause the leaves to turn brown and fall off prematurely. So that's also a factor. But it's basically the weather. Not quite the same thing in Iowa versus, let's say, Colorado.
Okay. So it's not a chemical in the soil,
no.
like lime or anything.
It's no, it's not that at all. It's just the environment, basically the weather. Some years they will, but that tends to be the exception, not the rule.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll just have to keep going to Colorado then to...
It's a great place to visit in the fall.
All right.
We love it out there.
Pat,
thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Doug is up next in Mount Vernon. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Hi, Charity. Yeah, I have a question. We have... these little animals are aerating our soil all around our house. They're called moles. How do you get rid of them? Somebody said I should put up little windmills everywhere. But
well, yeah, you could, but that wouldn't do much good, I'm
no.
afraid.
Oh.
If, in fact, they're moles, the best way to control them, get rid of them, is by trapping. It's not an easy thing to do. You have to be persistent, patient. You
mm-hmm.
have to basically keep on moving your trap around. And typically
mm-hmm.
what you want to do is when you see a new run, and if that run tends to be straight more than kind of zigzaggy,
mm-hmm.
Put it there and leave it there for a day or two. If you don't catch anything, move it again. You have to keep on moving it around. The good news is they don't live in big families. So you probably have
uh-huh.
one or two, not 10 or 12, okay?
Oh.
But they tend to be very elusive. They're very smart. And so you have
mm-hmm.
to be persistent and patient. But eventually, if you are, you'll probably catch it. The problem is that doesn't prevent a neighboring mole from moving in once you get out the original inhabitant. So...
All right, so what, obviously, moles create these runs,
mm-hmm.
and they annoy a lot of people. What does that do to your lawn?
Well, basically what they do is they have deep runs and shallow runs. You don't see the deep runs. You see the shallow ones because they lift up the ground. And when they do that in the spring and fall, typically, if you don't do anything, that raised area may die because the roots of the grass dries out. And so you have these dead areas. One thing you obviously can do is simply go out there and camp it back down, and that should keep the grass still alive.
So just basically simply walking along the run and pushing it back
right,
to the ground.
Camping it back down, right, would help as far as keeping the grass alive. But that's the main thing. And then they get into flower beds and other areas too. So, but they're not eating the roots of the plants. They're feeding on things like grubs and earthworms. And so they're causing damage to the plants, not in purpose. They just get in the way.
A byproduct.
Right.
So. All right. Well, thank you so much for your call, Doug. And you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to our break here, during the winter, of course, many, many garden groups plan a lot of learning events. Here's one that someone just sent to me, Project Green in Iowa City, holding its first winter garden forum on Sunday, which is free and open to the public from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Iowa City Public Library. And they're having Edward Lyon from Ryman Gardens talking about Midwest gardening, possibilities beyond the prairie. And, of course, many garden groups, I know, take on this time of year as a great opportunity to share and get together and learn a lot of stuff in the winter months. So it's always good to look around and see what people are doing in your neck of the woods. We're going to take a short break. Again, you can call us 866-780-9100. With me this hour, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulturist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Pardon me, a winter cold is catching up with me here. Let's go to the phones. We've got some more questions about moles from Patty in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Wonderful. I know it's too cold to put mole traps in the ground now, but someone suggests if I take away their food source, they might wander elsewhere.
Right. That's kind of a common misconception. So people will say, well, just go out there and put on an insecticide to control the grubs. And yes, you can do that to control the grubs, but the grubs are only a very small part of their diet, so eliminating them still leaves plenty of food as far as the earthworms, and there's nothing that will kill the earthworms. So that typically doesn't work very well, unfortunately, but it's very common belief.
It sounds really sensible.
It does, but it doesn't work.
Sorry about that, Patty. Speaking of things that sound sensible, this one's from Phyllis, and going back to some older wisdom, what are your thoughts about gardening by moon sign, a la the Old Farmer's Almanac? Is there scientific evidence to support planting according to the sign of the moon? I've had some old-timers tell me that they always plant according to the moon sign, and their crops never fail. I've not done this, and I have crop failure. So I
base it on the weather.
Okay. And you've had many, many successes.
Well, and some failures too, but the weather is a much better indicator as far as the present weather, the forecast.
All right. Although the moon signs tend to roughly line up to the average weather. So
they do somewhat, yeah.
Okay. A little bit of luck goes into to that,
maybe,
too.
Maybe a little bit more than a little bit.
Okay. Quite a bit of luck. So, Phyllis, I think they're saying that's not necessarily recommended.
No.
Okay. Let's go to the phones, 866-780-9100. Kristen in Fort Dodge. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I have a indoor plant, and it's kind of like a tree. And when I was looking it up online, it's called apparently a dragon tree. I have no idea how to say its like actual name.
Yeah, it's a type of Dracaena.
But what?
It's a type of Dracaena. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. But anyway, my husband bought it for me several years ago, and it keeps growing, and it's great. It's wonderful. But now it's hitting like that 4.5 foot, 5 foot mark. And how do I keep it from not growing any taller?
Right. It will continue to grow taller unless you cut it back. And you can cut this one back to within a couple of feet, even, of the base of the soil, and it will produce a new shoot and start this process over again.
Okay. I didn't want to just lob it off and have it be a stump hanging out of the ground.
Well, so, and yeah, and that's what it's going to kind of look like for a little while. But if it's in an environment that it's doing well and growing well, it will probably, you know, resprout some new shoots and grow quite nicely. So.
And you can also take off that top once you cut it off. Mm-hmm. And stick that in either some perlite or coarse sand. Keep it moist,
and
that
it.
Top portion should root.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you'll have another.
Two. You have two.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, thanks very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Kristen. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Eric is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Great. What's your question?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. I was just checking... I had run into a lady whose husband was working, I think, in the horticulture possible department in Iowa City, and I know that they had planted some redwood trees on pink vine, and that she also had one in her yard. And I think they're called dwarf redwoods, and I'm just wondering, is that something that is easily sourced, or and if so, if I could get them, how would you plant it, grow it, whatever?
If you're referring to the Don Redwoods,
okay, that, maybe that's good.
Don Redwood is a deciduous conifer, and so they will drop their leaves in the fall, unlike most other conifers. As far as hardiness, they're kind of iffy in Iowa. People have tried them in the southern half of the state, basically south of Highway 30. We did have one or two on campus. I'm not sure how exactly they're faring, but they're very interesting trees because they have kind of very fine-looking foliage. They have kind of fluted trunks, so they're very attractive trees, but they're kind of iffy in Iowa.
Okay. Yeah, I've just seen, I know that they're on pink vine every time I'm on hole, I think 15 or 14, but I could see them. I was just wondering if it's something that you can get from anywhere? Or
you'll see them occasionally at nurseries, sometimes mail order catalogs. Now, there's another deciduous conifer that we commonly grow in Iowa, and that's the bald cypress. And it has kind of a similar appearance. Again, you have this very kind of very fine foliage, kind of a nice, attractive green. You also have the fluted trunks. And so kind of similar, and we can grow that very nicely in the southern two-thirds of Iowa, the bald cypress. Very common in the trade, a nice tree.
And, boy, those redwoods certainly attract people. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of questions mm-hmm. about them. We love the idea of possibly mm-hmm. being able to grow them. But the bald cypress is so beautiful.
It is. A very nice tree. This grows in the swamps of Florida, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And amazingly, it grows in Iowa. It's amazing.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Eric. 866-780-9100. Scott is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Scott. Scott,
good
are you
morning.
There?
Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, what's your question?
Yes. Well, we've got kind of a conservatory behind our house. It goes down. You know, it's a pretty good grade going down. And we've got cottonwoods and cherry and oak. And a lot of good big trees, but I've been getting rid of the volunteers, a lot of cherry volunteers out there. And, of course, it's clearing and it's looking nice like a savanna. That's the way I want it. But I want to put some ground cover down that's going to help make sure that there isn't a lot of erosion and some options that might just help in looking at making it a little more pretty out there.
I would look at woodland phlox, for example. That makes a nice... ground cover. It's native to Iowa.
Okay.
I would look at wild ginger. It's also native, makes a nice ground cover. Bloodroot, possibly. All these plants kind of spread, and they're native. They're native woodland plants. So those would be possibilities.
Sounds great. It should be better than the mustard I've got growing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, we don't want the mustard.
And so does he need to plant plants, nursery plants in the spring, or what do you think the best way for him to go about seeding that area is?
I would buy plants, and those are available at garden centers, catalogs, and establish them that way. And then once they're established, they'll spread on their own as far as from seed. So, but I would just put in various native woodland plants.
Okay, and these are pretty good in a, more of a shaded area because the big trees are definitely going to bring
absolutely shade. They're native woodland plants, so they're terrific.
Excellent.
All right.
Okay.
Yep, Scott, thanks a lot for your call. And as those native plants spread, I always find it interesting. Sometimes bluebells are my very favorite flower, and so I want a lot of them in the sort of wooded area in our backyard. So we've tried in various ways to get them, and they keep spreading to the path that we walk on. because it's a clearer area.
And you can pack the seed into the soil, so you have good seed-soil contact.
Right.
They germinate.
Right, and so they're always on the path. We're working on it. Still a work in progress. Next up, let's go to Bill in North Liberty. We do want to talk about moles on this very cold January day. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. I have had a periodic from year to year. We have a piece of ground that backs up to the Corps of Engineers here on the reservoir. And once I get one or two moles a year, but last year was just absolutely horrible. And so I had to resort to, like, three different types of traps. I've tried the poison gas you put down. I've had people tell me if you just keep driving over the mounds, it'll eventually disturb them. And I have to tell you, I've had very little success. So what I am going to do next year is where the Corps of Engineers ground is, I'm going to build a wall, and I'm going to make the Corps of Engineers pay for it. That's how I'm keeping the. That's my solution to keeping the moles out in case anybody else has the same problem.
All right, Bill. Very
good luck with that.
Thanks a lot for your call. You can't even keep politics out of Hort Day these days. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your plant questions or comments. 866-780-9100. Julia is up next in Creston. Hi, Julia.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
We've got a farm south down here in southwest Iowa, and we plant a lot of trees. And I never can depend on the cottonwoods that we plant. We've had several that they'll grow for about 15, 20 years and get really, really tall, and then they get really trashy and really, really brittle, and then they die. But yet we've got a cottonwood out in the middle of the field that's right by a tile, and it's huge, and it will never die. And you hear of these cottonwoods that are massive. So what's the difference?
Well, cottonwoods are native. They're a very fast-growing tree, but they're also very weak-wooded, and they are prone to a number of insects and disease. So, yes, on occasion you see these huge, humongous trees, but, you know, maybe quite a few of these trees might never reach that size because of a windstorm that destroys them, or maybe insects or disease. I will say when you plant them, like in a windbreak, that when you plant them real close, they tend to decline much more rapidly because they're just so tight together. That a tree out in by itself may actually do much better because it has really no competition. But in a windbreak, they're so close together that they typically tend to live much shorter lives.
Okay. Thanks for the reason. I will tell my brother.
All right. Yeah, good luck, Julie. Of course, dead cottonwood trees provide a lot of great habitat for a lot of different wild animals. So,
because they tend to be hollow, right?
Yep. All right. Next, let's go to Mary in Johnston. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, it's out of season, but my rhubarb has been getting feebler and feebler for the last couple of years. My mother used manure. What do you suggest?
Well, what I would suggest is maybe this year that you don't harvest at all. You just leave it grow and hopefully regain its vigor. I would go out in early spring and I would fertilize it, and I would put on maybe a 10-10-10, maybe a half a cup or so around each plant. Make sure to water it during extreme dry periods. Keep out the weeds. Let it simply grow. If it tries to flower, immediately pull the flower stalks and just give it 1 year to simply recover, hopefully. And if it doesn't by next year, then I would get new plants next spring.
Okay. All right.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Mary. Now, in our garden, we had this very healthy stand of rhubarb that got worse and worse, but we eventually realized that shade was encroaching. We had a tree that had grown
right.
and was shading it. So obviously we should have come to that conclusion earlier, but you need
that's
to
another factor
look
too.
Around.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cheryl's on the line next. Hello, Cheryl.
Yes. Hi. My mother-in-law has a hibiscus plant, and she kept it outside on her deck this summer. It did very well and mm-hmm. brought it in then this fall. And not too long after that, the leaves started turning yellow, and it dropped all its leaves. She thought there also looked like there could be something on the underside of the leaves. So another person, they brought something, I don't even know what it was, some type of spray and sprayed it. But anyhow, all the leaves eventually fell off, and we thought it was done for. However, it came back and has beautiful green leaves, is blooming wonderfully now. Mm-hmm. Another clue might be there was a plant right underneath it on the floor there, a very smaller plant. It also dropped its leaves about the same time, and it's also came back then. Do you think it was insects?
Well, not probably for the leaf drop. Hibiscus, the mm-hmm. tropical hibiscus, we often put it outside. That massive leaf drop that it experienced just mm-hmm. because it has less light indoors than it had outside. So like many houseplants, they mm-hmm. produce a certain type of leaf for a sunny situation for outside and a shade leaf for inside. And so it just, mm-hmm. you know, cut its losses, mm-hmm. dropped all those leaves that it produced mm-hmm. for sun and mm-hmm. has produced the shade leaves, which are usually mm-hmm. a lot less. Hibiscus is tough. This is a really tough yep. tropical plant. Hang on to it. It's going to come back. Yep. It's going to bloom because it's got those long days inside because yes. you've got the lights on. And the insect that you saw was probably something called whitefly. Aphids or whitefly are pretty common on hibiscus. Mm-hmm. And you can spray them. I would hold off. You can just kind of wash them up while they're indoors with just even a soapy water solution. Just to kind of clean them up so that you can, if you want to spray again when you take them outside, that's fine. They're a magnet for certain insects like whitefly and aphid, but it's usually pretty easy to control.
All right, Cheryl, thank you so much for your call. We've got an email question from Earl. Should I be worried that my Dawn Redwood didn't lose its needles this winter?
When they're young, sometimes they tend to retain their foliage later than normal, so it's hard to say at this point. I don't know. Wait
and watch.
Yes.
All right. And this is a comment from Cindy near Ames. Midwestern nurseries that specialize in native plants in and near Iowa can be a great way to obtain native wildflowers, both prairies and woodlands, and they're easy to find online. And there have been so many more opportunities to pick up those plants in recent years.
Oh,
the
yes.
access
absolutely.
Is really
yes.
really improved dramatically. So we talk about this almost every winter, but right now, while we're so frigid, what does having temperatures this cold do for our plants? Is there a positive side?
It keeps them dormant, basically, so they should be okay. It hasn't been extremely cold. It's been cold, but not extremely so. I think most plants are doing just fine.
All right, just a nice, long, good sleep.
Yep.
Which is what a lot of us wish we were doing
exactly.
right now. All right. We will be back with Horticulture Day on January 27th. Our normal day would be on the 20th, but we will be carrying inauguration coverage that day. So we'll be back with Horticulture Day on January 27th. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.